Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Julia Spencer Fleming will be in Cambridge, New York tonight to discuss her new book, Through the Evil Days, a Claire Ferguson and Russ Van Alstyne mystery, the mystery series set in Washington County, New York. She'll be at Battenkill Books at 7 o'clock, and it's a wonderful pleasure to welcome Julia Spencer Fleming back to the Roundtable. Thank you so much for being with us. What a delight.
It's always a delight to be here, Joe.
Love having you here. This book has been in the works for how long?
About 2 years. It takes me a while to write my books, as people who've been following the series have found out. But it was a really interesting book to write. The previous one that I did, One Was a Soldier, was a really big book. It was a long story. It was told through 8 viewpoint characters, and it was a mosaic of many people's stories laid out to create one picture. When I was done with that, I wanted to do something that felt very different, that was very intimate and very tightly focused, and thus the framework of Through the Evil Days, which is my hero and heroine, Russ and Claire, up at a fictional Adirondack lake for a belated honeymoon, and they are trapped by an ice storm. And, of course, they stumble across meth dealers, as one does.
Certainly in the Adirondacks.
What
I found, we've talked about this before, but I find this fascinating before we talk about the story itself. Mm-hmm. But you are from this region. You do not currently live in this region. Mm-hmm. You are now in Maine. And what is it about it, about this area, the Adirondacks, Washington County specifically, that you relate to in finding to be a suitable setting not only for you, but for these particular characters?
You know, you think of a place like Washington County as being very sleepy in a lot of ways. But I think that it's in the forefront of a lot of types of the same kind of areas in the United States. It's a county that was formerly flourishing with agriculture and with, you know, mills in Hudson Falls and a little bit further over in Glens Falls. It was an area that was gutted out, industrially speaking. The agriculture, the dairy farms are very shaky ground. And it's a place where new people are moving in. Tourism is gradually creeping in to replace it. So you have these conflicts between the old families who've been there for 200 years and new people who are coming up from the South. And you have the old ways of making money, which have vanished, and the new ways that aren't quite replacing the sort of incomes that men and women could earn. And all that leads to kind of an endless churning of conflict. And then, of course, you add on the weather on top of it, and it makes an interesting setting.
How much do you rely on memory for the creation of the place, and how much is the time that you spend there now when you do these tours and other visits?
Probably 50-50. Mm. That really deep, I would describe it as the bone-deep sense of knowing that part of New York, comes from my childhood, from year after year of coming back for summers and Christmas. And then, as we've discussed before, when my parents got out of the military, we lived there, lived in Argyle, New York, for about 4 years, and continued to come back and visit. So I have that to draw on. I find it's very important to be doing the visits. I probably come, you know, 3 or 4 times a year. I have very good friends in Hudson Falls and in Greenwich. And it's important to drive around, to refresh myself with the sounds and the smells and the sights. And there are new things that are coming and going. So I can't rely on memory from the 70s and 80s to cover it all.
And I guess that is my next question about the place changes, of course, and as all places do, and but it still retains the basic character, doesn't it?
I think it does. I think that it's upstate New York stubbornly resists changing its character,
and in that way, and I've had great discussions with the editors of Yankee Magazine and mm-hmm. Fodor's travel guides, because often upstate New York will get lumped into New England just because of the similarities, and because there are so many ties. There is a difference, and yet it does fall into that.
It's very New England-like, certainly Washington County right. area, maybe Essex County, because they're running neck and neck with Vermont.
Borders Vermont.
But it has the same sort of differences, just as Vermont and New Hampshire are both New England, but they are not like each other, nor are they like Maine. So there are these interesting regional flavors that comes to each one of them. But yeah, I would agree that in many ways, the eastern Adirondack area is more New England than perhaps any other part of New York State.
So bringing the characters to the Adirondacks, this allows you even more remoteness, doesn't it?
It does. I decided, as I said, I wanted to isolate them. I wanted to get them away. So I sent them up on their honeymoon, which is on an imaginary lake that's sort of a cross between the very small lake Casayuna outside of Argyle, mm-hmm. Where I used to hang out in the summertime, and a couple of other, I drew on elements of some of the other lakes further up in the park to make it big enough and isolated enough.
Right, like Friends Lake and Bram Lake and those types.
Right, exactly. And then what I did was, because we've talked before, a lot of times the theme that I start out with is a social issue. I've dealt with PCB pollution and adoption and PTSD. This theme was really starting out with a meteorological event that I lived through, and if you were around here, you lived through too, which was the Great Ice Storm of 98.
Right.
I was in Maine, and that was a shattering, no pun intended, event throughout our region, northern New England and that part of New York State. Over 3 million people were without power. Roads were impassable. Highways were impassable. Power lines down everywhere. The emergency police and rescue communications were interrupted and in some places failed completely. Cell phone towers fell down because of the ice. And I myself, in my 200-year-old house, was out of power for 9 days, an event that has scarred me for life.
It's one of those things you never forget.
No, and you never want to relive it.
Right.
But even at the time, I wasn't writing yet back in 98, but I remember thinking this would make a fantastic story. And for years, I've thought and planned about a standalone thriller that was based in the ice storm. But I haven't gotten to writing that yet. And so when I knew that I wanted to isolate my characters and have different groups of them in places where they were really having trouble getting around or getting together or getting information, I thought of the ice storm.
And all of this is going on, and with Russ and Claire, he is trying to protect her at a very vulnerable time in her life.
Yes, she is pregnant. At the end of the last book, we discover she is unexpectedly pregnant after they have agreed that they're probably not going to have any children because her career is very demanding, and he is, in this book, 53 years old. And I have to say, having reached 52 myself, I have great sympathy for Russ's reasons.
You get it.
Yeah. If I thought I was going to have a baby, I'd probably throw myself off a bridge.
There's a realization in reading these books in the last few of really the differences between these two characters, but also their similarities, even in profession.
It's what has always made them interesting for me, because it's sort of a compare and contrast. They are both in professions where they wear uniforms, they are held to very high standards, they are outsiders in a certain way in a community where they also are the ultimate insiders, knowing more than anyone else does. And for both of them, their primary purpose is helping other people. They go about it very differently. And of course, it gives them a completely different look at the world. At one point in the book, Claire is saying, well, maybe it won't be that bad. And Russ says, you live in a world where the glass is always half full and good things happen. And I live in a world where the glass, you know, with bad news and worse outcomes. And that's really the contrast between them.
And that duality of frustration and deep love, of course.
Yeah, which we all experience in our intimate relationships. You know, I had people, when they finally got married off in the last book, I had people say, well, is that going to be the end? You know, because it's boring now, right?
It killed that Lois and Clark series.
Yeah.
When they finally got together.
Yeah, it does. And you know, in a lot of TV series, it does kill.
Yeah.
But I think in some ways that's because people don't want to explore what it really means for two people who are very dissimilar to try and work out living together, existing together, cooperating, you know, especially Russ and Claire, who, of course, wind up fighting crime together, as one does.
Julia Spencer Fleming is our guest. The name of the new novel is Through the Evil Days. She will be at Battenkill Books at 7 p.m. tonight. I'm curious as to your experiences with this in going around the country and talking to readers. We who live here know this about crime and drugs and all of the issues that are often considered to be city problems that we live with, just as everyone lives with. How much of a surprise is that to people who aren't from here?
It's less and less a surprise nowadays. I think the inroads of particularly meth in rural America are pretty widely known nowadays. If you had gone back maybe a decade or more before it was widely known, people would be surprised. It's really these nice bucolic places. I mean, they figure, what would you have? You'd have somebody stealing your pickup truck or something.
Right.
But in fact, as we know, rural areas are the best places to set up your meth labs. And they're also have a never-ending supply, it seems, of willing customers. So that is something that's definitely raised awareness all over the United States.
I had this conversation with Louise Penny recently about the term cozy.
Mm-hmm.
It is something that seems to be often attributed to a certain type of mystery fiction. And we look at the cover of this book, and there's a blanket of snow, and there's a church steeple, and the lovely branches, and a few magnified snowflakes coming down. And you do get that feeling, but there's so much grit to the story itself.
That has actually been an ongoing issue with my books. I always describe my books as traditional mysteries.
Yes.
But they're really very much a combination of, there's an amateur sleuth very deeply involved, the priest, but they are also very much police procedurals as well, because the Miller's Kill Police Department is doing the sort of thing that one expects them to. It's almost a given for some people, if you've got a small town and you've got a minister, then it must be a cozy. And then I get these emails, you know, outraged emails saying, I was shocked at the language and the violence in this book. You know, I had it, my sixth book, I think it was, had a torture murder in it. And I think once you've done that, you really cast off any pretensions to being a cozy.
And by my count, this is the eighth in this series?
Yes, the eighth.
So when you've said your path, do you get into discussions with the publisher, or you just let them do their thing and you do your thing and not worry about it?
No, we each do our thing. I have a fantastic editor, Katie Gilligan, who very much gets my stories, which are such genre blenders. There's a lot of romance. There's kind of a exploration of the town and the environment and the economy. And then, of course, there's the mystery. And she has a great intuitive grasp of that. But, you know, I do my thing and then I present it to them and they work it out. They've been incredibly supportive, especially given the fact that the last two books have taken me about 2 years to get through and, you know, get to them.
What takes you that time? Which, by the way, seems, I think that seems a pretty good clip as far as I'm concerned, because it's such hard work. But there are others in the profession who show you up because they've got 8-10, you know, a year.
Yeah. I know. Well, we all wish we could be Nora Roberts.
Right.
And the standard for crime fiction, the ideal standard is a book a year. And I certainly would like to work towards that. For me, it's a combination. One is I'm a mom. I've got kids at home. I now have two. We've gotten, our son has fled the nest for college this fall. And so that's certainly opening up more time. But, you know, when you're driving kids around and doing all that, and that is right. important to me. It's
sure.
It's important for me to be there for them. The other is I am a very craftsman-like worker. I really need to write slowly and carefully, and I tend to go back. I turn in very clean copy, as we say, that doesn't need too much in terms of editing, but that's because I spend a lot of time, as it were, beating it over a rock until it hits the shape that I want it to be.
When do you know that it's in that shape?
Yeah, I just do.
You know.
I just know. It's like when I get...
it sounds right.
It sounds right. My poor husband, it drives him nuts. He says, he'll always say, well, how long is this book going to be? He said, maybe you should write a shorter book. Then you could get it done faster. And I said, I just write the book as long as the story is. You know, how long is the story? I don't know. Right. I don't know until I get to the end. And then I say, oh, that's the end.
Erica Zhang was just telling me a story of where she feels that that her husband always threatens to go in the middle of the night into her desk, finally take the book and submit it. So she'll just let go of it.
My husband, for the last book, when it was going on, suggested that I just wrap it up by having a meteorite strike Miller's Kill. Boom, that's the ending, yes.
Was it always your intention for it to be a series?
It was certainly my hope for it to be a series. When I sold the first book, I thought if it only ended there, it would have a lovely, bittersweet ending. Because at the end of In the Bleak Midwinter is when Russ and Claire first realize that completely without volition, they've fallen for one mm-hmm. another. But I wanted it to be a series. I didn't think it was going to go on this long. I always thought that the primary question was, will these two people find a way to be together or will they be forced apart? And once I answered that, I thought, well, that's the end of it. But I came to that question, I answered it, and then I discovered I had a lot more story to tell about Miller's Kill and the people there.
And you still feel that you have story to tell.
I do. I'm working on the ninth book right now, which I'm enjoying a lot. It goes back into the past, which I've done once before in my third book. And we're doing a case that involves three generations of the police chiefs of Miller's Kill. So that's very entertaining. Getting to go back and see, for instance, the very mature, very self-confident Russ as a 20-year-old who's come back from Vietnam.
The name of the new book, the eighth in the series, is Through the Evil Days. It is published by Minotaur. And Julia Spencer-Fleming will be at Bat and Kill Books tonight at 7 o'clock for an event, a reading, and a signing. Julia Spencer Fleming, it's always a delight to have you here. Thank you very much, and have a wonderful time in Cambridge tonight.
Thank you, Joe.
Delight. Again, Julia Spencer Fleming's new book is Through the Evil Days. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.